Hello, my name is Chip Lang. You're listening to Total EM. I have with me Kevin Burns today, who's also a PA, and a pretty cool one at that, because he gets to do a lot of stuff that I am honestly jealous about. And he does some pre-hospital side, and he's got this residency program going for him, and all this other cool stuff. You know what? I should just let Kevin introduce himself and tell him a little bit more about him.
Hi, Chip. Thanks for having me on the podcast. I'm a big fan, as they say in radio, long-time listener, first-time caller. I am a practicing emergency medicine PA here in New England. I've been practicing for about 15 years, and prior to that was a paramedic. And my role here at Yale, I wear a couple of different hats. I serve as our hospital EMS coordinator in a variety of EMS administrative and leadership roles. And recently, I've also taken on the role as a director of our PA Emergency Medicine Residency, which is a new program we started here at Yale. So a couple of different things to keep the day interesting for me.
Yeah, in fact, you just have a new batch of residents, from my understanding, too. So you had this residency program. It lasts about 18 months, is that right?
It does. This is our third class that we're just starting. They literally just started today with residence orientation. So it's a pretty exciting time for us to have the new class of PGY1s coming in.
And what all do you get to do on this residency program? Because it sounds really cool.
It's pretty impressive what they get to do. I have to say, if I was younger and more motivated, I'd want to go back and apply myself. They rotate, obviously, through the emergency departments in a variety of community and academic settings. They do 10 weeks of pediatric emergency medicine, but also a large variety of off-service rotations that you typically won't get exposed to as a new grad PA. They're spending, you know, close to 2 months in the medical ICU, rotating through anesthesia, trauma, surgery, EMS. They get to fly. And they one thing that I really like that we have in our program is they have a dedicated month of simulation. So our residents spend an entire month in our sim lab, just running through sort of the rare scenarios you might not have a chance to do through your career, and also learning how to teach simulation to the students. So it's a sort of an interesting collection of opportunities that they have.
And to me, I think simulation is a rather big deal. When I was looking at my own PA program, I chose the one I did based on the simulation system that they had. And it was incredible at the time. But even now, they've made it its own state-of-the-art building. And I'm really impressed by it. So I find it important that simulation is a big part of medicine, because like you said, there are a lot of things that you're probably not going to see in your career, or you may only see once or even twice in your career. And it's better to have that first time exposure in a training environment where you can screw up and not kill someone than in the real world the first time, where you got to figure everything out on your own and hopefully have some resources to help you out. But those types of things, I think, are really worth picking a good, solid program for just like that.
Absolutely. I think it's such a huge part of your training that if you're dedicating this year and a half to a residency, you really want to be sure that you have those type of opportunities if you're going down that career route.
Now, we didn't all come on here just to talk about how awesome your residency program is, although it is.
You can continue that if you like. I'm okay with it. The awesomeness.
We're just going to plug this all in at once, but I think other residency programs may become jealous in that case. But no, what I want to talk about today is actually something that you and I have as a common interest, and we've talked about this before off air, and that is pre-hospital PAs. And I really love the idea of PAs being in the pre-hospital environment, and it's been done before, and it continues to be done in certain places, but not a lot. And so we actually had the first ever EMS section. So tell us a little more about the EMS section of SEMPA and what the goal is and everything like that.
So it's sort of a project that's continuously evolving. The concept at first was just to try and identify who was actually out there and working in the pre-hospital setting. If you look at our physician colleagues, we certainly know that EMS physicians make up a very small subset of EM docs in general. And I think that's even more tenfold on the PA side of things, where there are a few of us out there that are working with EMS, but it's not a lot. It's a small group. So the hope was to create this section just to get us all down in the room, swap some phone numbers and emails, and just, don't feel alone in the world to know that there are other PAs out there that have the same sort of interest that we do.
And I think there are a few stories swapped in the process. Not too many, but a few. But you put enough firefighters, EMS, everything like that together, you're going to get some stories and a little bit of fishtails in there too.
I think it's required by law to have at least a dozen war stories anytime you put more than one EMS provider
that
in the room.
And some language, which there was a little bit of that going on.
Yeah. If we had added beer, we would have had the trifecta and just would have gone on all night.
So instead, we had like an hour to summarize everything we needed to go through. Now, you actually did something very, very important and something I think we need to talk about right now about your involvement in trying to push something that is essential when we're talking about pre-hospital PAs, because there are essentially three different environments or three different ways to use pre-hospital PAs, or at least in the EMS system in general. One is to make us medical directors or assistant medical directors, which we talked a little bit about during the section meeting, but not a ton, but we did talk about it. Another one is for these low acuity patients who tend to overuse the system, I guess you could say. You know, our ambulances are getting tied up with these low acuity patients that really do not need to be transferred by EMS or are coming in for chronic complaints. And so having someone who's in the pre-hospital environment to help reduce the use of that and try and prevent them from ever getting to the emergency department using appropriate means. And then the third one, which is the big sexy one I think everyone loves the most, is the high acuity critical ill type patients. And so basically this is usually falls into helicopter EMS or HIMS. And you had a conversation at a meeting of theirs at CAMES where you talked to them about this very specific issue. Can you elaborate on what you did there?
So this is a project that we've been working on at SEMPA for the last couple of years. I actually have just cycled off a term on the board of directors at SEMPA. But I was approached at one of our annual conferences a couple of years back by a SEMPA member. He had been a longtime practicing EMPA and had been flying with his hospital's flight program for many years until the program decided to go through the accreditation process with CAMES. If for those folks that aren't familiar with CAMES, they are essentially sort of a joint commission for critical care transport. It's the Commission on Accreditation of Medical Transport Systems. When his institution went through this credentialing process, they reviewed the standards, and there was really no role recognized in there for PAs. It's RNs, paramedics, physicians. But the PA provider just didn't make the list, and unfortunately, he was no longer able to fly with his service. So we took this on as a bit of a mission for a SEMPA member and sort of a way to try and advance the profession, and began a dialogue with CAMES. And thankfully, after some conversation back and forth, they were fantastic, very receptive to the discussion. They invited us to attend their board meeting down in San Antonio this past April. So we gave a presentation there regarding the educational process for PAs, our scope of practice, and why we felt that we should be added to the list of providers for their standards. And thankfully, it was a very positive reception. And after the meeting, they advised us they would be adding us to the list of folks that would be approved to staff a crew with an accredited transportation service.
And I have to thank you very much for what you did there as far as going to CAMES to get this addressed, because I know you say it was for one member, but really it was for quite a few members. And actually at that meeting, I mean, everyone who is there was in some way affected by that. Even if your state is not one or your area is not one to use CAMES yet, it's coming most likely. That or there's a few other smaller agencies out there that exist, but CAMES is a big one. And for us as PAs who want to be involved in the pre-hospital setting, there are ways to get around it, but it's just not the same. And really with critical care transport, PAs have definitely a place to be used. And so I think we should talk about real briefly here, Kevin, about how PAs can be used in the three different areas we talked about. So I guess first, let's talk about medical direction. How can we use PAs as medical directors?
Well, I think a lot of it is going to be system dependent. As the old saying goes in EMS, if you've seen one EMS system, you've seen one EMS system. And a lot of it's going to have to be tailored to the local needs and certainly the state regulations for practice. You know, there are some states like Montana that are very liberal with their regulations and recognize PAs as being able to fully serve as medical directors for EMS services. And there's a lot of variability across the nation. And a lot of states, I don't believe, actually make it into the regulations, not as a slight, but maybe just that we had never been considered.
I was going to say, yeah, that's actually a bit of an issue that I don't think is something that we should look at as we're being targeted. It's just simply that there are not enough PAs out there in this environment or looking at this environment. So if you're listening to this and you're a PA, don't feel offended that you haven't been, you know, that you didn't make the cut, because sometimes it's just simply a lack of knowledge, which is what it sounds like happened with Kames more than anything.
Exactly. It was not an intentional slight of it. So it's just that, you know, it's the chicken and the egg. We weren't out there practicing very much in the critical care setting, so the thought wasn't there to include us on the list of providers. In terms of the role as a medical director, I think so much of it is going to be locally driven that there's going to be a lot of variability. But my personal philosophy on this is that we, you know, practice in every other specialty of medicine out there. You know, we're from cardiovascular surgery to neonatology, and EMS is a recognized subspecialty of medicine now. So there's really no reason why a PA with the drive and interest shouldn't be able to branch out into that specialty of emergency medicine.
In states where there may not be as many rural or remote EDs that are maybe only staffed by a PA, there are places throughout the country that do just have a single PA coverage and that's it. That solo coverage environment makes it really hard to provide medical control if your state doesn't even allow medical control, let alone a medical director as a PA. And in Missouri, it's a very much a gray zone. It's something we're trying to figure out in our own department, but we're trying to figure out how do we use PAs in that setting, because what happens when the physician's tied up or is away from the department doing something else because something else is happening elsewhere in the hospital that requires a physician, whatever the case may be? What happens when it's only the PA around who's able to do medical control? And so I feel like medical control, medical direction all ties in together, but we need to be standardized in this, which is a lot of what our conversation at the EMS section was about, was trying to figure out how can we somewhat standardize the laws and the policies across the states so that we can have a more forward-thinking and more even-keeled practice throughout the country, which I guess in some ways leads us to the next part, is talking about another role of PAs, is talking about pre-hospital PAs, but for the lower acuity patients. And so I know there have been programs that have existed before. There's been some research in this as well that you can easily find, and we'll include some of those in the show notes as well. But what are your visions, and what are some of the things that we've talked about as far as how to use these PAs for these types of patients?
So I certainly think that there is a great opportunity for us to expand out into that role. Anyone who's familiar with the current concepts in EMS certainly knows the role of mobile integrated healthcare. And a large part of the conversation revolves around community paramedics and expanding the role of paramedics. But I think there's also a place to bring advanced practice providers like PAs to serve a big role in that. I think you mentioned, as you said, there are a couple of pilot programs and smaller programs out there. And anecdotally, they certainly seem to be successful. If you look at the folks down in Mesa, Arizona, they're running a combination PA and a paramedic unit responding to a lot of those low acuity calls. And I have not seen the published data yet, but from what I've heard through the grapevine, they've certainly seen a lot of savings in terms of cost of the healthcare system.
Now, we should talk about a little bit in detail why this may be a good idea. As a PA, or MP for that matter, someone who's an advanced practice provider who can take care of patients in this kind of setting, unlike community care paramedics in the most part, because there's still not a really good standardization of that yet, but we can see, diagnose, and treat patients. And there are two important parts there. We can diagnose and we can treat, not just treat with whatever medications we have on the ambulance, but we can write prescriptions and things like that, which paramedics, at least to my knowledge, and there really isn't anything where you can actually say, I'm going to make the diagnosis of this and I'm going to interpret any test that I may have at the bedside for this. Other than there are some exceptions where you kind of look at each case, things like that. I'm not to demean anyways the paramedics or EMTs that are out there, having been formerly myself. But the big thing is that we want to look at the way that we can be used differently. We're able to give these patients things that paramedics legally cannot at this time, or simply, and you know, a lot of my paramedic friends, we talk about this, it's simply something that's outside their scope of practice or outside their skill set. So it's something that we can definitely provide, which is why I think these low acuity patients, there is a role for it. Now, again, I think one of the biggest hindrances is sometimes it's ourselves, because we don't want to think of ourselves as seeing the low acuity patients, but there are definitely needs for it, and there are ways to make it happen. And I even did home visits before, and kind of almost a former life of mine where that was one of the things I did in a somewhat pre-hospital setting to help prevent readmissions. And it was wildly successful in what we were able to do in that time. So this is something that is a truly important role for us to do because of our clinical background and our abilities under the law. What we can do is huge, and we should take advantage of that.
Absolutely. I think you really hit the nail on the head. I think psychologically, we would certainly love to think that we're out there, you know, managing the glamorous trauma resuscitations or cardiac arrests. But as a paramedic myself, I think we can both vouch for the fact that paramedics are fantastically educated on how to take care of someone who's actively dying. It's those lower acuity patients that you tended to roll your eyes at as you were dispatched to as a paramedic, where there's really a need. You know, we really didn't spend a lot of time in medic school reviewing chronic back pain or how to treat a cellulitis. So I think, though it's not as glamorous as some of the hot priority one calls, I think that's where we can really make a big impact on the health system, are with some of those lower acuity patients.
Which now leads me to talking about the sexy patients that we like to think about sometimes, these high acuity patients. There is definitely a role for us still in that case. And I know this is probably the most hotly debated out of all three areas. And this is the one that even in the EMS section, there was a little bit of contention there for some points of, do you really need, I don't think anyone was trying to say that we don't need PAs in this role, but how do you say that we need PAs? But I think no one was trying to fight against PAs at all. But I think what we're trying to figure out in this EMS section was, how do we best use PAs in the more advanced and critical ill type patients? And I know you had some thoughts on this yourself, and I want you to kind of talk about that, and we'll throw in some other viewpoints.
I mean, I think in terms of managing the critically ill patients, you have two very separate concepts. You have the 911 system with the undifferentiated patient with response out to the scene, and you're also talking about your critical care interfacility patients. I think those are two very distinct skill sets, and really what you would expect from the PA in those settings is going to be quite a bit different.
And that's a very good point. I think the easier one to accomplish first is, let's talk about the interfacility patients.
Exactly. I mean, I think we're really tailor-made for a lot of those roles. One of the things I really enjoyed about doing some research for the CAMES project is I got to have some conversations with PAs around the country that are already practicing in a pre-hospital critical care setting. I know I don't want SEMPA to take all the credit for this project. We did this in conjunction with some of our colleagues on the ICU side of things with SACM and PAs in critical care. And I had the chance to talk to some folks that had some really fascinating practice settings. I talked to a PA in the Pacific Northwest who is part of an ECMO team and responds out to smaller community hospitals, is candidating patients, starting ECMO, and transporting back to his home institution. Even at my home institution where I practice, our neonatal ICU uses PAs as part of our pediatric transport team, and they'll respond out as a team leader with the RN and respiratory therapist. So there's a lot of different roles out there for PAs that can really benefit the critical care transport setting.
One thing especially useful in the critical care interfacility transports is that I know one of the big arguments that's out there is, how do you bill for this? And there are, of course, many, many facets. I think it'd be a whole podcast just talking about how billing works. But keep in mind that you can actually bill for critical care time. And there are EMS agencies that are actually using that right now, where the provider is billing their critical care time equivalent, just like you would if you're working in an ICU or ED setting. So there is that. Don't forget about that side of it. Now, the trickier one is, how do you use us in the pre-hospital environment? This is truly pre-hospital. This is not interfacility transfer. How do you use this with the high acuity sick patients? So let's say basically like the types of patients who we get called for, who are the rollover MVCs with multiple injuries, or the, you know, complex patient with multiple medical problems that's severely ill. How do we get into that role, and what is our benefit there?
So I think we can serve as an asset to the system. I think probably for 99% of those critically ill patients, the medics are going to do a fantastic job, and they don't need somebody else looking over their shoulders. But there are going to be settings, and I think we're seeing this in more and more systems, where with some of the systems around the country are using EMS physician response vehicles, And I think there's also a role there for PAs to participate in that. That's a part of my clinical practice at my own institution, as I'm part of our physician response team, where if a incident commander at a major incident feels that they could benefit from additional resources, they'll request us and we'll respond out to the scene. It's, you know, not a matter of sort of showboating. It's if the IC just has the feeling that they could use some extra help, they can bring us in as another tool.
And so in both cases, what you talk about a lot, both for pre-hospital and inter-facility, is essentially the PA is the team leader. So it's not someone who's necessarily the highest on high in some ways, but is literally someone who's coming in from a different perspective. And if you look at pre-hospital physicians in other countries, in Australia, the United Kingdom, even Canada, the way they get used is more as this team leader role and as thinking about the clinical side of the patient, the actual patient be in the medical sense, whereas you, the paramedic, is doing the technical skills for the most part, or the nurse or whoever is alongside them is actually doing a little more of the technical side, is also the person, especially this happens a lot in the HIM setting, they're the ones who are managing the logistics of the medical transport and care, versus the actual PA, physician, whoever is acting as the clinician. And that's because we come from two very different environments in those types of cases, where the paramedic is actually someone who has had, in a lot of times, 10, 15, 20, 30 plus years experience in the pre-hospital environment and knows the logistics, unlike someone who has only got maybe a few years in that setting, but has a different mindset and knows some additional skill sets that may be beneficial to that patient in the time frame it takes. And these are usually patients who are going to be in remote settings a lot of times. This is why it's being often flown out or something else, or having long transport times, which is probably where we're going to be most useful, especially initially.
Exactly. I think really the two roles just complement each other in terms of, you know, provision of technical skills and scene know-how, and then just bring in some of that extra medical knowledge to help improve hopefully the outcomes for the patient. It's one thing that we really try to emphasize with our medics is that we're, you know, really trying to get away from the term medical control. We really like them to think of this as a consultation, really no different than if I call a cardiologist for a consult. You're just really talking to one of a colleague that may have a special knowledge base that can help you to get a little bit of direction and come up with the best way to go with taking care of your patient.
I like that. I actually like that consultation way you just described it, because that is often part of the issue. Now, for me, when I also talk about this, I cannot go without saying that a lot of times there are going to be certain procedures that a PA or a physician can do that paramedics simply cannot, because again, legally or skill-wise or competence level, stuff like that. And so there are definitely going to be those times when you may need that. That tends not to happen a lot. Like you said, it's kind of the 1%, but when you need it right now. For example, you can do needle decompression as a paramedic, but chest tubes or finger thoracostomies or even true resuscitated thoracotomies are going to be things that are going to be outside of the paramedic skill set in most cases. Whereas that's going to be something that a PA or a physician can do. Also, some other advanced procedures that are rare to do in most cases anyway, things like lateral canthotomy for eyes, for a retrobulbar hematoma or stuff like that, certain types of reduction techniques that exist, just or even blocks or certain procedures that would just, again, be outside of the paramedic skill set, whether that's now or legally or just because of simply inexperience. Those are the types of things that sometimes PAs or physicians can also attribute that we don't see right now.
Absolutely. I think that's sort of the perfect example is there are going to be just those, there's certain things that a medic is not going to have in their toolbox. You know, I can give you one example that we had with our own response team a few years back. They had sort of a larger woman took a fall and suffered a hip dislocation in her bedroom. And just the logistics of trying to get her out of that bed was not going to happen. So they requested our response team. Our EMS fellow responded out, and after a little bit of ketamine, was able to get her sedated on scene, reduce the hip, and get her out to the ambulance. So there's going to be those scenarios where we can just add that extra little bit of help.
Exactly. And that's why I think, again, there is still going to be a role for us in each one of these settings. And obviously, this is a quick review. This is not an in-depth everything we're going to talk about, but this is the primer. This is the beginning of this is how you can use pre-hospital PAs. And this conversation is probably what we're going to have for decades to come. I know definitely the next few years are interesting for us, Kevin. We have a lot of work ahead of us. But sir, do you have any other thoughts initially that you'd want to talk about with pre-hospital PAs?
I think what I would really just encourage those with an interest in the topic to do is to reach out to your local EMS system. It may just be a case where they've never thought about having a PA be incorporated into part of the role there. What I found is if you just make the ask, you know, sort of volunteer yourself for a certain role within their system, you may be able to make a place for yourself. I think a lot of the focus with medical direction is focused on online medical direction. But a much bigger part of the system is the offline medical oversight, the development of protocol, CQI, education. And I think that's where we can really shine. There's a lot of work that needs to be done out there, and whether it's doing chart reviews or working with medics on research or training, I think a lot of our medical directors are understaffed, so they'd certainly be glad to have someone offer to lend a hand. That's really how I got my start. I was lucky enough at my hospital that my collaborating physician also happened to be the EMS medical director, and we just started chatting and found out that I was a paramedic and managed to make a spot for myself in the EMS section. So I think it's just getting to know who the leadership are and just asking them how you can help.
There are probably going to be other PAs in your state who are in the same boat. So don't think that you're by yourself there. And you can reach out to Kevin or myself. We have some other people out there too, again, part of the EMS section, who'd all be happy to lend their experience and expertise on this subject, because we're all trying to learn this together. And I really believe that we as PAs can make a huge difference in the pre-hospital setting. Well, I guess that's enough for one day. I think we've been able to expose people to at least the beginning concepts of pre-hospital PAs. And hopefully, if you're listening out there, whether or not you're a PA, a physician, RN, nurse practitioner, whatever the case may be, if you are someone who's involved in the pre-hospital environment and you have thoughts on this, I'm happy to learn what you're doing in your system, or if there's open concepts there. And I'm sure there's controversy to this. There's controversy to everything else we talk about, of course. And so I'd be happy to hear your thoughts and opinions on that as well. But until next time, Kevin, can you give us the tagline?
Absolutely. Until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.
Thank you for downloading another episode of Total EM. We want to thank our bandwidth sponsor, FunnyRx, for sponsoring this show. You can also see them on our website, but we also have included links to their website, funnyrx.com. Again, thank you, FunnyRx, for sponsoring this episode.